So they just recently issued the technical preview 5, and from what I understand, this is going to be the final public testing version of Windows Server 2016 before the official release. And so we want to talk about the Hyper-V. Can you tell us what's new with Hyper-V, what we're going to see in the Windows Server 2016?
Yeah, definitely. So Microsoft did a huge investment in this release again in Hyper-V and all the side, let's call it the side features, which are related to Hyper-V, right? So like storage and networking and things like that. So there are really a lot of things and a lot of new features in there. But if I would have to highlight one or two, I would definitely go for the shielded VMs part. So because this is something really, really new to the hypervisor world. So in the past, we as virtualization admins were always protecting our Hyper-V hosts, right? And this was good, and we were protecting us from the bad guys inside the VM. Mm-hmm. But now, who protects their data inside the VM, right, from us administrators? So if you are a Hyper-V administrator, you basically get, or also a VMware administrator, or other, maybe also a storage administrator, a network administrator, you basically get access to the virtual machine's data, right? Mm-hmm. And this is a problem if you think about service providers, and probably also if you want to move a server to the cloud where your data is in there, and you don't want to have the virtualization administrator of the service provider accessing your data, right? And that's something Microsoft really did focus on in this release. So they introduced a concept called shielded VMs, which has different, well, it consists of different security technologies. So for example, one is virtual secure mode, which protects basically the memory and the processes inside a virtual machine from being accessed by an administrator. Another thing is they introduced is the host guardian service. The host guardian service makes sure that the virtual machine only starts up on trusted hardware. So for example, if administrator copies the virtual machine, moves it to his private notebook or his private lab and tries to start it up, it won't start, right? So that's another cool thing. And then the last one, which is probably one of the most important ones, is the shielded VM part itself. So there will be a possible for a virtual TPM chip inside the virtual machine, and this will allow you to protect your virtual machine using BitLocker and encrypt the whole storage. And I think this is going to be really interesting part here, especially when you think about cloud and moving VMs to the cloud.
And do you think that's going to encourage people to start thinking more seriously about moving into the cloud with these sorts of protections in place?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm working in Switzerland, and I'm working there with a lot of customers, and we have a lot of customers working in the finance sector and things like that, and they have really concerns about like getting the data out of their own hands, right? And they have to make sure that their data is protected as good as they can. And especially in that sector, people are really thinking about, okay, we can use that feature and give our virtual machines basically to service providers or probably Azure or other cloud providers as well. I think that's going to boost it a little bit. Of course, there are still some legal concerns and things going on, but in terms of technology, this will really help.
So this new version of Hyper-V, a lot of people are using vSphere, the VMware ESXi hypervisor. That's sort of the recognized leader, I guess you would say, in the virtualization space. How close is Hyper-V getting to ESXi in terms of adoption? I've been hearing people say that the hypervisor has improved quite a bit, but the management, I guess, is still somewhat difficult compared to what you get in vSphere. Is that accurate?
Well, as a Hyper-V MVP, I wouldn't say that it's more difficult. I would say it's different. But I agree, it's not. If you're going in to VMware compete projects where we compare Hyper-V against VMware, it always comes a little bit up to the management stack, right? Mm-hmm. On a hypervisor level, in terms of performance, both have their advantages and disadvantages, but they're basically on the same level. It doesn't, to be honest, in my case, it doesn't really matter, basically, which hypervisor you use, right? It's not about only the hypervisor. It's a little bit more about the ecosystem as a whole. And Absolutely. So for management, it's kind of like different, right? So Microsoft is really going that cloud management things and thinking really big, using System Center, Virtual Machine Manager, and a lot of PowerShell to do some automation tasks, right? So if you're in this VMware space, you've got this vCenter solution where it's very simple to manage, and it does a great job there. And in the Microsoft world, you have to rethink that a little bit. So, for example, Virtual Machine Manager is not just a replacement for vCenter. It brings a lot more to the table here. It brings also like storage management, network management, and things like that, which is more like, it's more, the name probably Virtual Machine Manager is probably not the right one. It should be probably like Fabric Manager or something like that, because it does so much more, and it's basically the fabric management tool. So it builds that abstraction layer from your physical hardware to the virtual world, right? So it's, you can create resource pools called clouds and things like that. You can manage your tenants and things like that. So yeah, I totally agree. So it's hard to say. If you just want to have the same thing when you move from VMware to Hyper-V, it's probably not a good thing, right? It's not designed. You have to look at it as a whole in terms of management, and also probably want to rethink your storage infrastructure and your network infrastructure as well, because there you can get a lot of advantages when you do that, right?
Okay, so since you mentioned storage, let's move on to that area. So in Windows Server 2016, there are a lot of changes coming there from storage. Software-defined storage is something that's pretty hot right now, and Microsoft is introducing Storage Spaces Direct, which is an update of what Storage Spaces was. So can you go into a little detail about what Storage Spaces Direct is and what that means to administrators, how they're going to have to manage it or think about it or configure things if they want to implement this feature?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Microsoft is doing like great things in storage in the next release. So, like Storage Replica, and the other one, as you mentioned, the Storage Spaces Direct. So, Storage Spaces Direct, as you said, is kind of like a new version of Storage Spaces. There will be still that, let's call it the classic version of Storage Spaces, where you have like a server with a shared JBOD attached by SAS cables to two servers, and then created a cluster, right? For Storage Spaces Direct, Microsoft did a little bit of rethinking here. So what Storage Spaces Direct basically is, it's a cluster, but it's, there are no shared disks using a SAS bus or anything. So you just use servers or standard servers with local disks. This can be like SATA or SAS drives, SSDs, hard drives, or even NVMe SSD disks. You can use that, and you can then cluster that over several servers, just using network connectivity between them. So network, as you said, the whole data distribution goes over the network, and so it's using SMB 3.0 to do that, and it's recommended that you have like network cards using RDMA for SMB Direct and things like that, and at least get this 10 gig network or even more. And we have now some test hardware in our labs where we use 100 gig networking using RDMA, and what we could see, we could also have some really good SSDs in there, so we had some really good performance in there. And we could see when we disabled RDMA, we lost 50% of performance. So what people are really going to make sure in the next releases, and that was mentioned a little bit when you rethink about storage, you probably want to have like this fancy RDMA network cards, which allow you to get higher throughput and less latency in terms of that.
No, so they're, but for the most part, people will be able to use their existing hardware. It's just a little bit maybe of a network upgrade that they're going to need to implement this?
I wouldn't be sure about that. So it still should be like supported hardware, right? It should be still a Windows Server logo on it. I'm not quite sure yet if there will be something special for Storage Spaces Direct, where you can only use certified Storage Spaces Direct hardware. But basically, yes, you can use like just standard server, put in some fast network adapters, and you attach local disks, right? That's basically the whole concept. If it will be supported, you just build it yourself with any hardware you want. We will see about that. But Microsoft will definitely get some guidance here, what's going to happen. Another cool thing which is happening here is you're not only creating a scale-up file server cluster, you also have now the supported solution for a hyper-converged cluster. So your storage nodes can also run the virtual machines at the same time. So in that case, you can you don't have to build a file server cluster and a Hyper-V cluster. You just build it on one. You just build one cluster where you have both roles enabled, and you can use that. So a similar concept to Nutanix and other hyper-converged systems out there. And the only thing you have to pay is the Windows Server data center license and, of course, the hardware.
So being a new release, do you think there's going to be some hesitation for people to implement this, or do you think there's going to be a tendency to hold off because it is a little bit of a change and maybe some of the ways people have been using their storage setup?
Yeah, absolutely. So this feature, I think there will be several customers who will go for that, and I think it will be one of the features in Windows Server which will be the most tested feature in this release, right? Because it's so new, since we have that, I think in technical preview 3 or even a little bit early, we could start to test that. And we could also start doing a lot of testing now. There are a lot of customers out there already doing that with the technical previews. So I guess it will be a good feature, and will be that I don't guess there will be a lot of issues. Now, to implement that is probably it's not about just I want this. Probably it's more about a little bit of the storage lifecycle, right? If I still have, for example, a fan in place or just bought one a year ago, I'm not just going to replace that because, storage space is direct is here. So, but for all those who have to buy new storage or have to evaluate new storage, storage space is direct should be definitely considered, right? So there are coming some cool features in there. For example, storage cores, which will be a feature which allows you to do storage cores on virtual machine group levels and things like that. And this technology goes through the whole stack, right? It's based on Hyper-V, but it also has to use the scale-up file server and storage spaces. And you only get that cool feature if you use the whole stack, right? Okay. And so for people who are switching from VMware or who are already using VMware and have to go for a new storage solution, I think they definitely should consider storage spaces direct or have at least a look at it.
And do you think there's going to be any difficulties? You know, making backups is one of the things that administrators are tasked with, and is that something that makes it easier, or is storage spaces direct going to make that a little more interesting to try and make sure you're making all the files and the data that you need protected?
Well, it's going to be a little bit different, but it's not going to be more difficult or something. I think there is another improvement which comes with Hyper-V, and that is a lot of, for example, change tracking, which now is introduced in Hyper-V itself for backup. So Microsoft makes it easier for backup vendors to integrate with their backup solutions, right? So backup of virtual machines running on scale-up file server or storage spaces direct, I think that will be an easy thing to do. And it will be not adding a lot of challenges here, I guess. And the cool thing here is you can also use storage spaces direct as a backup target, right? So you can, for example, just have a production or a storage spaces direct cluster with very fast disks, with SSDs and things like that, running your virtual machines. But you can also have a very cheap solution, but with a lot of storage, with a little bit slower disks, or as your backup target. So you can use both. It's not just designed for virtual machines. You can also use storage spaces direct use as a backup target, for example, for your cold data and things like that, like archival data or backup data.
This sounds similar to what VMware introduced, the VMware vSAN, where you're pooling storage. And I know vSAN, I haven't followed it lately, but I knew there was a limit in the number of nodes that you could attach to pool the storage. Do you know what the technical specifications are on storage spaces direct? Is there a certain number of you know, nodes that you can attach to it before it's limit. You hit the limit on that.
That's a very good question. And I have heard several different numbers, but again, in that case, Microsoft didn't really announce something yet. So, but what we know, for example, for technical preview 5 now, we have to have at least 4 nodes right now to get that started. You can also build it if in a test environment with less nodes, but you should have 4 nodes to go in TP5. And about the numbers and scale, like the maximum numbers, this is going to be really interesting, but that are things which are tested right now, right? So all the numbers Microsoft is telling you, like, for example, how much memory can a virtual machine have, how many virtual machines can I run on a cluster, all that numbers are tested numbers. So Microsoft is now starting to test those numbers and testing the scale of the systems and also optimizing the scale and things like that. And we will see and when Windows Server 2016 hits what will be the real numbers here. So they were also asking about people about how many nodes do you wish do you have in there. So, but there is no official communication right now. Microsoft is really testing it. What does work at its best, and where does it stop working? Right.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Maybe that they're not going to issue anything official because they may be continuing to make improvements, so those numbers could change. So that makes sense. We'll just have to wait and see until they give us a little more concrete information. What are the similarities between Namino Server and Server Core, and where are they different? I know the Namino Server is quite a bit smaller than Server Core, but how else are they different? Because Microsoft tried this minimal footprint before, but it didn't seem to be widely adopted.
Yeah, that's actually a very good question. So a lot of people just remember Server Core. Microsoft started, I think, with Windows Server 2008. They started with Windows, where they officially showed Windows Server Core. And basically what Windows Server Core was just a Windows Server, and they just removed the UI, right? But it wasn't a real fundamental change here. So it still had all the applications in there. It still had all the roles in there, which were just there, you could activate them, but just the UI was gone, right? And that was okay, well, but it had some other issues as well. So management, for example, with 2008 or 2008 R2, there was PowerShell, but to be honest, there weren't really good PowerShell modules available. So there was no module for clustering, there was no module for Hyper-V, so you couldn't really use Hyper-V PowerShell to manage Hyper-V, right? And this was definitely a problem here. But with Namino Server, this is a little bit changing. So we now have the tools. We have now PowerShell in a version where we can really do some serious management and can basically do everything, but not even more, using PowerShell. And this is going to be a little bit of the change. So the difference here, as I said, I would say Server Core is the thing where they just remove the UI. And Namino Server is completely refactored, right? There is a base image, and then they are following that zero footprint model. So all the server roles and features are basically not included in the basic Namino Server image. So you have to add that to your image before you deploy it or when the server is running, right? You can use PowerShell package management, but you have to download it, and it's not just like activate it because it's already there. You really have to add it to the server. So that's how they keep the footprint very, very small on that system.
Do you think this is going to be an issue for administrators who prefer to use a GUI to manage their servers? How can they prepare themselves for this change?
Absolutely. So this is really going to be a big change for a lot of people out there. So for all us Windows administrators who used Windows Server now for years, this is completely different, right? And Namino Server in the short term right now won't replace Windows Server or the full server for everyone, right? There is still some features missing, and also for probably smaller environments, you don't have the need for nano server, and you probably prefer the full server, or how they call it today would be Windows Server with desktop experience. And this is definitely going to be a total rethinking, right? So again, it's not that you, when you look at it today, an administrator goes to a server, he installs Windows Server, goes to Server Manager, and adds the roles and features he wants, right? In the future with Nano Server, basically you go there, you take your PowerShell module, you create a new image, you say, okay, I want to have an image including Hyper-V and the failover clustering, and then probably add some drivers and things like that. You create that image, you take that image, and then you're going to deploy that to the server, right? And this is like building it up front instead of like adding the roles and features afterwards. So it's going to be a rethinking of like deployment, but as you said, also about management, right? So it's a lot about remote management, no more RDP, if you will, to connect to your servers. To do that, you have to use the remote management tools you get today.
And is this something, in your experience that you've been working with, is this a very solid release and is something that is you would encourage people to use right away, or have you run into some issues with it that maybe they're not huge showstoppers, but is there anything that people need to be aware of if they're going to use Nano Server?
It's a little bit like storage spaces, right? So Nano Server is pretty new, so Microsoft invested a lot of time testing Nano Server, so I don't expect that there will be a lot of issues or unknown issues. But of course, what you have to consider is a little bit like, how do I manage that? How does that work? And also, which applications do I run on Nano Server? So I have to be aware that, for example, as of today, I can't create Active Directory server on Nano Server, right? So I can't install the Active Directory role, for example. So I have to know which roles are supported for Nano Server. But to be honest, especially for the Hyper-V and storage server part, I would definitely recommend going with Nano Server because the footprint is much smaller and it's less attack surface. And I just talked to some guys here at the conference, and they were telling us that they are testing in their own labs Nano Server, and they stress it out. For example, they deploy thousands of virtual machines on a Nano Server Hyper-V host, and it works just fine. So I think this is going to be a solid release for especially for the Hyper-V and storage parts.
The other buzz that's been happening for the last few years is containers. Now, I think I have a simple grasp on what containers are, but you're an expert in this field. I'm going to ask you to explain containers to the Windows Server people, because my understanding is you have a base operating system, and then instead of the traditional app server model, you're slicing up applications into layers of services that run on top of the operating system.
Containers are nothing new, right? They are existing in the Linux world for a long time. So I went to the Linux container description on Wikipedia, and there is a lot of technical things explained how that works and things like that, but there's one or basically two words which are really important and which made it clear to me. So it's the word operating system level virtualization, right? So if you think about it, what we are doing today with using Hyper-V or VMware or other hypervisors, we are creating virtual hardware where we then install operating system on, right? And with containers, we are not creating virtual hardware, we are basically creating virtual OS containers, right? So you're using the OS and virtualizing the operating system for applications or other tasks in there. And that's basically the big difference here. So in terms of isolations, I also try to explain to people that containers are basically something between process and virtual machine, right? They're not as isolated as the virtual machines and have a lot less overhead than a virtual machine. Mm-hmm. But they are not as, like, they still live in their own environment, right? So not every process can access another process. They still have this isolated thing. So they are somewhere between a process and a virtual machine. And that makes them really cool for some scenarios, right? So if you think about it, they're very lightweight. You can deploy much more containers on the same hardware than you can, like, deploy virtual machines, because you don't have that OS overhead all the time. They also start up very fast. It takes just seconds or milliseconds to start a new container. In terms of a virtual machine, there is an operating system booting, right? With containers, the operating system is already running. We just create a new environment where applications can run, and this basically takes, as I said, milliseconds, right? So it's going to be definitely an interesting thing. It's still hard, though, to say which applications I'm going to deploy in there, right? So if I think about enterprise companies, they ask me, like, okay, now there's containers. What do I deploy in there? And it's still hard to see what people are going to do, right? It's there's not a advice right now from Microsoft, okay, containers are designed for this. So they're giving us a tool or functions with containers or new features, and they're curious about what people are doing with that, right? Of course, there are some cases. For example, one of the cases is where developers can use containers, for example, if you think about it, to test applications, right? Instead of having like five virtual machines to test five different versions of your application, you can spin up like five containers, and it takes just seconds to do that, and you deploy the application five times, right? So this is what would be one of them. So test scenarios or developer scenarios are really good. Although also, if you deploy applications like web servers and you have to spin up multiple web servers in a very short time, containers can help with that, for example.
So
but it's going to be interesting what people do.
Yeah, so there's no plans on the horizon for some of these big applications like Exchange being refactored into sort of a container.
It depends. I don't know what probably the Exchange team thinks containers are very cool, right? Probably they can use it for something. So, but what we have a little bit to expect is that containers are, as of today, they are mostly designed for like stateless, right? Stateless applications and things like that. So you really have to have an application which is designed to run in such environments, right? So for example, you can like spin up workers, for example, in containers, but store the data outside of a container, for example, on a file share or, you know, a database or something. That would work. But containers are not going to be the solution for everything, right? In my opinion. There are like a lot of people saying, okay, container, in the future we will only work with containers, and there are others saying, okay, yeah, containers is a good thing, but the virtual machines are the way to go, and we're kind of like between in the middle. So there are definitely some use cases for containers, and there are definitely use cases to have virtual machines. And I think both, there won't be one or the other. I think they will both work together, I guess. So we really have to see which big applications can use the container technology.
Mm-hmm. So here's another thing that I'm glad I have you on the phone so you can explain it to me. So we have Windows containers, we have Hyper-V containers, and do you have to run, like on Windows Server, would you have to run containers inside those environments?
Well, there are two things here you were talking about. One is the container runtime. That's basically the engine which runs the containers. That can be Windows Server containers or Hyper-V containers. And the difference between Windows Server containers and Hyper-V containers is that Hyper-V container adds some extra layer of isolation. So they will be a little bit more isolated, a little bit more secure, if you will, for some scenarios, but they're also a little bit slower than, for example, Windows Server containers. So that's something. And on the other hand, you have that container images, which are basically the templates. If you're going to create a new container, it's always based on a container image.
Okay.
And Microsoft will at the release will offer two of them. One will be Nano Server as a container image, and the other one will be Server Core as an image. And then from there, with that layering you mentioned, you're going to create a new container from either Nano Server or Server Core. It's going to install the application you want inside that container. So, for example, if you want to make it an IIS web server, you're going to install the role IIS. You're going to stop that container, and you create a new container image from that container. So you create a new template, basically. Okay. So the next time you want to spin up a web server, you just use that container image with the IIS already installed, and then you can deploy that like multiple times. And as you mentioned, the layering here is that this IIS container image now is linked to the operating system image, like the server core or Nano server, and it only has the changes, like this IIS web server role in there. It's basically that what's stored now in that image, and they have that link. So you can really stack them up, as you said, with different layers and add something and store it again to the library, and then probably deploy it and add something else, and you get that huge stack of different layers, and you can use that. So that's a very cool solution out there in the future.
So there's been some interesting things coming out of Microsoft lately. There's been sort of a shift in their embracing open source, and Linux-based features are starting to be slowly come into the Windows ecosystem. How can administrators get ready? Is this sort of what they're, it's not just a Windows world anymore, they're going to have to learn some of these new technologies, and do you have any advice for people who are, their boss says, okay, here's a Linux server, let's see what you can do with it. How can people prepare themselves for if that comes about?
So, yeah, this Linux, Microsoft is doing really a lot of things with open source, right? So they've realized that they are, if there are people, for example, building a new startup, for example, you're trying to build the next Netflix or Hulu or whatever, you're probably going to use open source technology, right? So you're going to probably use some like Apache or whatever and all that kind of technology out there. And that's what they realized, that not everything runs on Windows, right? So not everything is installed on Windows Server. And so they started in Azure to deploy a lot of Linux VMs. So a huge amount of Linux of VMs hosted in Azure are basically running Linux workloads. And this is great. And Microsoft did really understand that there is not just one thing, and they are going for it on different levels, right? They also announced now, I think it was at Build Conference a couple of weeks ago, where they announced that now Bash is available on Windows 10, right? So you can enable Bash, and developers can, for example, use tools which are on Linux and run them on a Windows machine, right? To build new applications or to deploy stuff. If you're a server administrator, for example, there are also some certifications for the Linux world. And what is really cool is that there is a Microsoft certification now, which is, I'm not sure about the real about the right name, but it's about Linux on Azure. Mm-hmm. So it's basically one exam is the Azure exam, and the other exam is an official Linux Foundation exam. And so if you take both, you're at the, when you pass both exams, you're going to be Linux on Azure certified. And this is probably a good starting point, especially if you're doing Linux work as well. So you don't have to take the Azure exam if you're not working with Azure, but you can go with that basic Linux exams, and this will help, and just get the basics, right, to do that. It's not that there is there are some resources. There are some resources, for example, on the Microsoft Channel 9 or other blogs out there where they talk a little bit about, like, Linux for Windows Server administrators, right? So how they can learn and what are the differences and things like that.
Yeah, one of the articles we had on our site recently was building a home lab, and that seems to be something that people are taking more of an interest in. It's like, okay, I don't have time to learn about these technologies at work, so I'm going to have to go home and maybe to future-proof myself. I need to learn more about Hyper-V. I need to learn about Linux. So, yeah, that's also another option that administrators have. They'll have to, you know, take some personal time to pick up some new skills.
Yep, Absolutely. I mean, I have to do that too, right? And it's not that I can go to, for example, to a customer and just tell them about new things, which I've never done before. So what I'm doing basically is, like, for me, it's more the Microsoft world. So if Microsoft releases something new, I'm going to download it, the evaluation version, the technical previews, and try that out, right? So there are some good, Microsoft is really, like, focusing on documentation right now. Mm-hmm. But that's something new as well. So there's some really good documentation where you have this easy step-by-step thing. So you can really go through that and deploy and try to understand how this connects together. And you can also get some of the limitations and some of the advantages. But you have to invest some time, right? So there are several things to learn. And Linux is probably one of them. But I also encourage, like, if you don't do PowerShell today, PowerShell is going to be really important in the future, right? So, that's Microsoft is telling us that for years now, but they're still, if I look at a lot of people, they still haven't really used PowerShell for quite a while now.
Yeah, I think.
When I do container demos, for example, or nanoserver demos, they're all based on PowerShell. It's not because I want to make the demos look fancy or something. It's just because there's no other way to do it. Mm. It's just PowerShell.
Thomas, I appreciate you taking the time to speak with me, educate me. I've learned quite a bit, and I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out with Windows Server 2016, hopefully in the fall.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. It was a really interesting talk. Really liked that, really enjoyed it, and I'm also looking forward for Windows Server 2016.